Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger here on American Family Radio. Glad to be with you today. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. Maybe you're taking care of an aging loved one. Maybe after Thanksgiving, you saw something that caused some alarm bells to ring and you're thinking, oh my goodness, we're going to be dealing with caregiving issues. Is there a radio show out there for caregivers? Why, yes, there is. You're listening to it. It is the show, and I'm bringing you four decades of experience to help you stay strong and healthy as you take care of someone who is not, because healthy caregivers make better caregivers. That is the whole point of everything we're doing here at this program, HopeForTheCaregiver.com. If you will indulge me one more time on a cabin story, because I've been working in our cabin and this remodel that we've done. Now, for those of you who are just now joining in and don't know anything about what I'm talking about, I built a new addition for Gracie that is more handicap accessible. Lots of wide open doorways, that kind of thing. Because it just, we've been chasing our tails for years trying to retrofit everything. And finally, we just knuckled down and we built something that was new for her. But we put it against and connected it to the older cabin that's been out here on this property. It was built, the original part of this thing was built during, well, let me just give you context here. We're in Trump's second non-consecutive term, okay? There's only two presidents who've been elected to two non-consecutive terms, Trump and Garfield. The old part of this cabin was built in Garfield's second non-consecutive term. That's how old this thing is, built in 1895 or so. And it has been a bit of a challenge to marry these two structures together. And in the old part, there's some problems. And we had a door there, and we took it out. It went out to what was then the mudroom. And then this was kind of a, well, it's a long story. But anyway, so we took the door out because there's a framed wall now behind it that opens up into the new addition. And we don't need this door, and it needs to be framed so that I can seal it up. I have some leftover wood that we use for the stuff on the ceiling, and I'm going to put it right there, and it'll match up. It's tongue and groove, and it'll match up perfectly with the paneling that's in the old part of the cabin right now. Gracie wants me to paint it all, and I said, no, I will not. I'm just going to get it up. I don't care if it looks different colors. I'm the one that it's in the kitchen and I'm the one that does all the cooking. So I'm going to leave it there for now, but I just want to get it up and get it going. But my workers, it's been a bit of a problem. When you live in rural Montana, here's what you learn. You're going to pay a lot of money for stuff. You're going to have to wait a long time. Sometimes you're going to have to use duct tape, or you're going to have to do it yourself, or all of the above. Well, I decided to do it myself. And I've been doing a few little home improvement projects. But there's always one that gives me the willies. And that's dealing with saws. I looked at the table saw and, well, I've been a pianist longer than I've been a caregiver. Okay? And I'd like to keep all my fingers and hands because they pay the bills. When it comes to carpentry, I'm a really good pianist. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to tackle this thing. Now, I've already leveled the refrigerator. That was not that big of a deal. It was vexing, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't have lifelong career complications and consequences if I got it wrong. This could, because I looked at that table saw and it glistened in the afternoon sun and it knew. It had a little smugness to it. It knew. It knew what it was doing to me. And so I thought, well, I've met a lot of builders here in this county where we live. And they all but one, there was only one guy that was missing one finger. And none of them were missing a hand. None of them had to answer to Lefty. So I thought, well, okay, that's encouraging. And so I thought, well, if they can keep their body parts, maybe I can too. So I got to work. And nothing, of course, in this cabin is plumb. And so the level and I had a little bit of an argument. We sparred for a bit. But the studs went in, and something close to a square took shape. And despite a few caregiving interruptions, because I stopped to make dinner, and I don't like to stop in a project because I lose my place and I kind of get into a momentum. But caregiving calls, and so I got up and took care of some things with Gracie and helped with dinner and everything else. But the wall was framed by sundown. I got it done, and I was pretty proud of myself. I took some pictures, even boast a little bit. I FaceTimed with some, and I sent pictures to my sister. My brother-in-law, my sister's husband, is so gifted. I mean, he can build anything, and I am not. My brother, John, my oldest brother, he is a builder, and he manages massive apartments and condos and office buildings and things like that that he does. My sister oversees building. All of my brothers, they're all tool savvy, and they do things like that. Not me. Remember, I'm a pianist. And so I took a few victory laps with this, and I know that there are some builders out there that may roll their eyes, but if you played chopstick for me and bragged about it, I would probably roll my eyes too. Okay, so let's just keep it even. But it wasn't just the blade. It was the fear behind it. Okay, if I get this wrong, am I going to make a bigger mess? Am I going to do something that's going to cause even more problems? Am I going to hurt myself here? Because I promise you, nobody in my family wants me around sharp tools. There used to be a guy that lived here in this cabin that kind of looked over the property with for my in-laws, and we went out to get a Christmas tree. One of our first Christmases out here, I brought Gracie and the boys out here when they were little, and he went along with us, and he offered help cut down the tree. And I looked at him, and I said, "My in-laws told you to not let me get around a saw." And he kind of looked down at his feet and kind of shuffled a little bit. Nobody wants me to get around power tools, and I share their aversion. But here's the deal. I pushed myself to do this. I learned something new. And I did something that was way out of my comfort zone. Now, YouTube University, there's all kinds of things online that you can go out and learn how to do these things. And I have a policy of measuring 17 times and cutting once. And I do that very slowly. I'm extremely slow. If I charge by the hour, I couldn't afford me. I'm very slow. But I did it. And there is a framed wall in my kitchen that serves as a reminder to me that I did something that was way outside my norm. The number one fear in America, they say, is public speaking. I have spoken in front of more people than I can count, and played the piano in front of more people. It doesn't even faze me. I go on national television. Doesn't even faze me. But you get me around sharp instruments, and I get a little wild-eyed, and I'm very, very cautious with this. But I learned something, and I proved to myself that I could still learn something, even in a world where, as caregivers, we don't accomplish things a lot. We're showing up every day to fight an enemy that just will not be beat. Age, disease, trauma, we're not going to beat this. But we can find something that we can do. And from now on, every time I look at that wall, I'll know I framed it. I did this. The piano player, I did this. It's not much, but it's a lot to me. So my question to you is, what's something you can do today that maybe takes you out of your comfort zone, something you've never done before, that you can try, that you can accomplish, and it is done? Fighting an unwinnable battle every day is a confidence eroder. Find something to build that confidence up that you could say, I did this. I did this. And if you want to take pictures of it, or if you want to brag about it and nobody's around that you can brag to, go out to my website at hopeforthecaregiver.com and brag to me. I'll rejoice with you. I still get nervous around saws, but I made a wall. I did it, and I still have all my fingers. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back with a great interview you're going to love.
Do you believe in the absolute inerrancy of God's holy word? Do you believe in the power of the Holy Spirit to radically change lives and empower us to live like Christ? At Wesley Biblical Seminary, we believe God is raising up a movement of people across our nation and across the world who hold fast to the authority of the Bible and the hope of holiness. We are working today to equip tomorrow's pastors and Christian leaders through biblical and theological education in practical ministry that's accredited, affordable, online, and highly personal. Our programs include undergraduate, master's, and doctoral degrees, certificate programs, and even training for lay people. So whatever your next step is in being equipped for ministry, we're here for you. And if you believe these are the kinds of pastors we need leading our churches in the future, we invite you to learn more about partnering with us through giving. Learn more about Wesley Biblical Seminary by visiting us at wbs.edu today.
Hello, this is Walker Wildman, CEO of AFA Action. I'm convinced this coming year will determine whether the movement back towards Christian values in our government will be sustained, or will it fade? Which will it be? Who will prevail in the 2026 elections? Who will win the court battles? Who will advance godly values? You and other AFA Action supporters must play a part. This is why AFA Action has a supporter that has offered $200,000 to double the year-end gifts from faithful Christians like you. We need to impact Congress and state governments all around the country. We need to impact the courts. And lastly, we need to impact the 2026 midterm elections. As you've seen, the other side is playing for keeps. The woke radicals will spend and they will do virtually anything to destroy our Christian heritage and foundation, and they will succeed unless we stop them. To help double the impact of our challenge, go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the program for you as a family caregiver. Very glad to have you with us as we talk about all things caregiver related. I'm joined today by a fellow caregiver and fellow author, Carol Steinberg, and she has a lengthy credit as a writer with the New York Times and Success magazines and some other things. But she also left that career and went to work at a local Alzheimer's organization, and she, because her family has struggled with Alzheimer's, and she brings immense experience in dealing with that issue. But she's written a new book, and I'm going to let her tell you about that book in a moment. But I want to introduce to you Carol Steinberg. Carol, welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Tell me about your journey with Alzheimer's first, and I want to get into this book because I think it's such a wonderful book that you've done, and I love the audience that you're writing the book four and two, but I would like to hear a little bit more about your journey, and then we'll get into that if that's okay.
Absolutely. My dad had Alzheimer's disease, and we're talking back in the 1990s when Alzheimer's wasn't talked about that much, and there weren't many medications available to treat the disease. He and my mom were living in Florida. My siblings and I were living in New York. So to call myself a caregiver, I don't think I really should get that credit. I would say that I was there for my mom if she needed to talk and came down to help her out when needed. But I was dealing with raising a family on my own at that time, as were my siblings. So I would say my mom really gets all the credit for being a heroic caregiver. And when I look back, there were many things I think we maybe could have done differently. Maybe we could have convinced my mom to join a support group. Maybe we could have done more things with my dad. I think we were in the sort of realm of not knowing, not understanding the disease. And after my dad passed away, it was just by serendipity that I found an ad for a local Alzheimer's organization that was looking for a communications specialist. And based on my career as a freelance journalist, I felt that that was the right fit, and it was a way of giving back and honoring my dad. And from that local organization, we built a national organization where I was an executive for more than 12 years. So I'm extremely passionate about the disease, and I've sort of come full circle back into the Alzheimer's world now as someone who's semi-retired. I do write a Alzheimer's newsletter for a nonprofit organization called Voices of Alzheimer's. So I'm speaking with people with the disease and care partners continuously and seeing what the issues are.
When you look at the landscape of what's going on with this, what are you encouraged by? And then on the flip side, what are you discouraged by?
I think there is a lot of hope out there right now. And what I am encouraged by is so many of the people I interview are really positive and hopeful and trying to live the best life they can. And maybe that's a little different from the past, or maybe I just wasn't interviewing the right people in the past. But I think the hope comes from one, I think we are raising awareness of the importance of early detection of Alzheimer's disease so that people can take advantage of the new anti-amyloid drugs that are out there that can help slow progression for people in the very early stages of the disease or who are diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. There is so much research going on and clinical trials going on that hopefully more drugs will be coming down the pipeline. I'm also encouraged by the fact that there are more resources than ever before. 20 years ago, when my family was dealing with this disease, the resources were really few and far between. And now there are so many organizations that are focusing on Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. There are government programs like the new GUIDE program to help care partners navigate the disease. I also think what's encouraging is that more people are sharing their stories, and that's a big way to raise awareness. But on the flip side, what is discouraging is while there are so many drugs and clinical trials and research going on, recently there were two announcements about drug failures that a lot of people had really hoped would come to be. Discouraging too that we still have no cure. Discouraging too that we are seeing a lot more people with young onset Alzheimer's disease, people under 65 who are being diagnosed, and they don't get fair treatment from the government. They have to wait more than 2 years to qualify for Social Security after being on disability. So that's a real hardship for families.
What are some things that you're seeing that families are incorporating now that have the diagnosis, but they're doing smart things now to prepare for the escalation of this disease, not just with drugs, but maybe even natural things, structure within the family? What are some things that you're seeing that's like, wow, this is different. This didn't happen 20 years ago or whatever, that you're seeing that people are preparing themselves. They're almost like building bunkers to deal with Alzheimer's because it's a relentless assault on the family. And you do have to kind of shore up defenses. Are you seeing that being modeled out?
Building up bunkers is a great analogy. There's so much emphasis these days on lifestyle modifications. The Lancet Commission has emphasized there are 14 modifiable lifestyle changes that people can make to help reduce risk factors for the disease and to also help people with the disease perhaps slow the progression or live longer. Things like physical exercise, brain stimulation, socialization, taking care of vision or hearing problems, things like that. And people are paying attention to that more and more. And hopefully that does pan out down the road to either slow progression or stop the onset of this disease.
Do you see any dietary changes that people are making that are helping with this at all? Or any type of nutrition things that maybe that we didn't think about in the 90s or the early 2000s?
There's increasing emphasis on diet, particularly the Mediterranean diet, eating fish, eating a lot of vegetables, eating fruit, having that colorful plate that nutritionists always talk about.
You know, that is something that I've been watching and seeing how people change the way they look at food and everything else. And I mean, I'm doing that same for myself, and Alzheimer's not in my family, but it's just we have eaten so badly for so long as a society, and hopefully that we can start making some changes so people can take better care of themselves.
We have, by the way, Peter. I remember interviewing somebody who has young onset Alzheimer's, and he has adopted the Mediterranean diet, and he said to me, that what he misses is his pizza and wine, but he's really on a mission to get his body in the best shape possible to fight this disease.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things that we all love, but at what cost?
Exactly.
At what cost? Are you seeing more and more families rallying together? Because so many times in the past, this has torn families apart. And it's been a brutal assault on the family unit, the nuclear family unit. Are you seeing more and more families adjusting now and coming together and partnering in ways that maybe we haven't done before?
It's really hard to generalize on that front. Every family is different. Every family has different dynamics going into the disease. Every family has different relationships among the siblings. A lot depends perhaps on where a family member is living. Are they close to the person with the disease? Are they a long distance caregiver? Are they willing to move? There are so many issues that come into it. What I think the best thing families could do is to play on their strengths. For example, if there's someone in the family who's very knowledgeable about finances and legal issues, let them take the lead about getting things in place to make sure the family is ready for the financial burden ahead. If somebody is very good at communicating, have them lead that dinner time conversation about what do you want your future to look like if you get further along in this disease? Things like that. That's where my children's book, Come Grandpa Mia, Let's Fly, comes into play, because it's very much focused on intergenerational, the idea that families do need to come together to help the person with the disease, to help a young child understand what's going on and take the fear out of the disease, and also to help caregivers meet in the moment with the person with the disease.
You know, we just got through Thanksgiving, and sometimes the holiday meals and the holiday get-togethers are not the catalyst, but it's certainly a conversation starter that things have changed since last year. And the family gathers around the table and they start noticing some differences in family members they haven't seen in a while, grandparents and so forth. And so your book comes into play to have this conversation, because a lot of families now, I have found, start having these kind of conversations almost immediately after Thanksgiving, because they see each other for the first time in a while and they all get together and like, oh, something's not right. Are you seeing that?
Absolutely. I recently interviewed somebody who noticed people sitting around the table and realized, oh my goodness, there's my aunt, there's my uncle, there's my cousin. Something's not right with each of them. And this person realized that his family has the genetic history of Alzheimer's disease, and it led him to undergo genetic testing to see if he too had the APOE4 gene, which increases the risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. Recently on LinkedIn, prior to the Thanksgiving holiday, a very astute caregiving expert, Barry Jacobs, posted a message noting that the minute someone is in the doorway at the Thanksgiving dinner, you could note that something's amiss, that something's changed with the person, their memory, their behavior, the way they walk. And those are all clues. And for children sitting around the Thanksgiving table, they might not notice something at first, let's say with a grandfather or a grandmother. They might think, oh, this is grandpa or grandma just kidding like usual. But when it really hits home might be, like the character in my book, when grandpa mistakes them for someone else, doesn't recognize them anymore, doesn't know their name anymore. What's happening? What's going on here? And that's when families really need to sit down with young children and have that conversation to explain the disease in age-appropriate language and to mitigate some of those fears.
We've got to take a quick break. I'm talking with Carol Steinberg, and she's a journalist, fellow caregiver, and author of Come Grandpa Meow, Let's Fly. And she'll tell you the story behind that title when we come back. Don't forget, our new caregiver calendar for 2026 is available. Go out to standingwithhope.com/giving to see more about that. We'll be right back.
fostering and adoption is not a band-aid for infertility.
Nope,
like it is a calling, and God can change the desire of your heart and make that so rewarding. It's the most beautiful, selfless thing. It's pure religion, but it's not a fix to I desire biological child. God has to deal with that in your heart separately.
Hannah's Heart, encouraging couples through infertility and miscarriage. Saturdays, 4 a.m. Central on AFR or on the AFR app.
Children, of course, are given to parents by God, not to the state. Children don't belong to the state, and we need to make sure that those lines are very clearly protected in increasingly a secularized culture where the government has not only tried to make the church completely irrelevant, but basically replace parents.
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
I'm Rick Scarborough, and this is my take. Over the past decade, George Soros has funded the election of 75 liberal extremists of district attorney offices across the U.S. Today, 1 in 5 Americans live in cities where these DAs make decisions on criminal prosecution. Many cities under Soros-elected DAs have adopted a no-cash bail policy, leading to the release of many individuals, including repeat offenders of serious crimes. Law enforcement officers risk their lives to arrest dangerous criminals only to see them released. On August the 25th, President Trump signed an executive order to eliminate cashless bail in Washington, D.C. He cannot unilaterally change local and state laws, but using the threat of withholding federal funds may well influence local policy. We must remember that these DAs were elected by the people. It will only change if we, the people, know who we're voting for and vote. I'm Rick Scarborough, and that's my take.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberg. Glad to be with you. We're continuing our conversation with Carol Steinberg, and she is the author of a new children's book called Come Grandpa Meow, Let's Fly. Come Grandpa Meow, Let's Fly. She's going to tell you about the title of this in just a moment. But Carol, take a few moments to talk about this book and how it began. How did this start?
I actually wrote the first draft of this book the week my father passed away. As a journalist, it was sort of a creative outlet for me. It was a natural creative outlet for me to deal with the grieving process. And I kept going back to it over the years and tweaking it as I became more and more knowledgeable about the disease and just published the book pretty recently. It was a long time coming. The book is a story that explains the brain disorder in very age-appropriate language, designed, as I said, to eradicate fear and confusion. It tells the story of a young girl, Linny, who always loved playing with her grandfather and then begins to notice changes and runs to her mother very tearfully, what's going on with grandpa? And when I wrote the book, I really envisioned a young child sitting on a parent's or a grandparent's lap, having that adult read the story to them, having the child ask them questions. But what uniquely sets my story apart from other books is that in addition to the fictional story, it's complemented by a collection of intergenerational activities that respond to the question, now what? Now that we know what's going on with my loved one, how can we foster a bond that's loving and respectful? And the activities align with a growing body of research showing the value of intergenerational activities. Things like cooking, gardening, music, things that help the families, perhaps all generations of the families, including the caregiver, meet in the moment. Experts say that loved ones with the disease reap greater engagement and stimulation, improved mood, better quality of life, reduced social isolation. And the same goes for caregivers. Socialization is one of the biggest modifiable risk factors for the disease. So having all the generations involved in these activities could help everyone. For children, they end up showing greater empathy toward individuals with Alzheimer's disease. And they exhibit greater self-confidence and social skills and a heightened sense of community responsibilities. And those are such key issues that could help them so much later in life as they grow.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that, yeah, we focus so much on the benefits to the patient, but by us as adults and then certainly children engaging, I've noticed this, you know, even with my wife with severe disabilities, our grandchildren, they came to visit her in the hospital earlier this year and they were all up on the bed. I had a CNA there in the room that came in to take some vitals and they let our oldest grandson help take some of her vitals. What a much different way than saying, oh, we don't need to say anything. We need to stay, keep them away. No, engage them. They're crawling all over her hospital bed and everything else. And it's good medicine for everybody.
What a beautiful moment.
It was. And I've got a great picture of our oldest grandson and he's taking her blood pressure, you know. And I think that those are the kind of things that I would like to see families adopting more. We don't need to be Alzheimer's is scary. Alzheimer's is troubling, but we don't need to live in fear about it. Yet we do.
There is a lot of fear out there about that Alzheimer's fear. Disease. I will say that. That can't be denied because there is no cure right now. And it is horrific to see a loved one decline. There is so much anticipatory grief as you're watching a loved one. And then there is the traditional grief afterwards. But there are so many things that people can do, that all generations can do, to make the best of this disease. And I think that's the same with any type of condition. You could either make the best of it or you could make the worst of it. And it does take an optimistic attitude. It does take a lot of hard work, perhaps, but it can be done. And as I said, I have been interviewing a lot of people who really have adopted that attitude. They're traveling like they did before. They're taking on increased activities, socialization activities that we know can help offset risk factors or help offset progression of the disease.
One of the things I tell my fellow caregivers is you don't accidentally deal with this well. It's intentional. And it is, like you said, it's hard work, but it's good work. Our lives are improved as human beings. I have seen in my own life and in the lives of so many caregivers I've talked to, when we turn into this with the intent of we're going to live in this, not just avoid dying or avoid a crisis. We're going to live in this. And Gracie and I came to this conclusion many years ago. There was a point where we say, okay, we got to get through this surgery. We got to get through that surgery. And then we can get on with our lives. And then we came to this understanding that, no, this is our life. It's a hard life, but it's not a bad life. Life is life today. That's all we're promised anyway, is today.
Many caregivers have said that being a care partner gives them purpose. And that's a good thing.
It does. I also want to encourage fellow caregivers to see purpose more than just being a caregiver. And that's something I've had to wrestle with myself in these 40 years of this. Is that okay? Am I just a caregiver? There's nothing wrong with that. It's a great work, and I do things. But what else is there for me? Can I do anything more than this? And then I also look at caregivers who are lost after their loved one dies. And this is what I've seen very troubling with diseases like Alzheimer's, is that you get family members who are so consumed with mitigating what's going on with their loved one that they abandon their own life and their own health and their own careers and their own purpose and their own life. And I watched this one lady, for example, that comes to my mind who she put her business on hold to take care of her dad. She thought he was only going to last a couple of years. He ended up lasting 7 or 8 years and she was bankrupt and her company had folded by the time he died. That's just unacceptable. We've got to say, wave flags to people about that. Say, look, there is a better way here.
That's such an important point, Peter, that you're making, because there is life after being a care partner. So to prepare for that life, people really do need to take self-care. They need to have something, as you said, beyond simply being a care partner, although that role is so important. And especially with Alzheimer's disease, a disease that could even progress over a 20-year period, caregivers can get so lost if they don't take time for themselves to have their own identity. And having that intentional conversation is so important. And to be honest, my children's book grew out of some of the regrets I felt by not having that intentional conversation with my own girls, by not having them engage with my dad as much as I think they should have. So when I look back, there are so many things I would have done differently. And that's part of life, I think. You're not, until you're a parent, you don't know what it is to be a parent. Until you're a grandparent, you don't know what it's like to be a grandparent. Until you're dealing with Alzheimer's, you don't know what it's like to deal with Alzheimer's. But once you've lived that kind of life, you learn and you try to help other families do it better.
You do. And you are doing just that. Last word before we close. This is, like you said, we just had Thanksgiving. We're going into holiday season, which is very difficult for so many families that are dealing with caregiving issues. I call it the Bermuda Triangle with Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And it just, it can be tough. And the days are short. The nights are long. We've just come from this, and families may have for the first time seen some decline. What would you like to say to that family member who may be listening? They just now tuned in and they said, oh, that's us. This is what happened. We saw this at Thanksgiving dinner. What would you like to say to them?
Act on it. Early detection of Alzheimer's disease is so important. And it might not be Alzheimer's that is causing the memory loss or causing the other cognitive issues. It could be other conditions that are treatable. And if it is Alzheimer's disease, early detection is so important because you can make lifestyle changes. You can see if you qualify for the new anti-amyloid drugs that are coming out. So act on it. Start with your primary care physician, have a conversation about concerns, and then if necessary, go on through more extensive testing to get that accurate diagnosis.
Absolutely. You know, the resources that are available at the touch of a button are astounding now. You think about what it was 30 years ago and where it is now. And the information is out there at the touch of a button. And if you're having that situation and you saw this over the holidays or just noticing in general, and you have grandchildren, do not disconnect them from that family member. Have a conversation, get Carol's book, learn how to be able to engage with this. The family unit has become so disjuncted in our society. Let's bring that back and let's have this conversation. Children are much better at this if they have a good path to be able to understand this in ways that is age appropriate. And they can do things that are amazing. I have seen it over and over and over where there's just so much engagement and it's good for the children. With my grandson, for example, he's taking his grandmother's blood pressure in the hospital. Instead of being afraid of all the tubes and all the things like that, he's getting to do something that's fascinating to him. Who knows what that'll do for him as he continues to grow. But don't disconnect them. And Carol's given you a beautiful way to be able to do that. Carol, if people want to get your book, it's available on Amazon. And tell me the title of the book again.
Come Grandpa Meow, Let's Fly.
Why that title?
It's based on a song that my dad used to sing to us as children and to sing to his five granddaughters while they were swinging on a swing. And I sing that same song to my four grandchildren.
Oh, that is so precious. Now, tell us the title again and where they can get it.
Come Grandpa Meow, Let's Fly, a heartfelt children's story about Alzheimer's disease, plus a guide to intergenerational activities. It's available on Amazon. And I do want to give a shout out to my illustrator, Chelsea Cooper, who really brought the story to life and really captured my family in the book as well.
That's wonderful. And by the way, I think you all have noticed that Carol and I have two different types of accents, and we didn't require subtitles or an interpreter or of any kind. And she didn't have to raise an eyebrow at my Southern accent, and I was able to understand her Brooklyn accent. And so
I tried my best, Peter.
You did marvelous. You did marvelously. It was delightful. I want you to know how much I appreciate you coming on, Carol. This is the kind of thing that just grabs my heart and it is near and dear to me. And I know that the listeners are going to respond well to this because it's to have the conversation. Thank you for your willingness to put yourself out there and your family and the work that you do with so many other families. And I'm grateful to have you on the program.
Thank you. And thank you for all you do, Peter.
Yes, ma'am. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, "I know what I'm going to do." And I was kind of startled. I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus." And I said, "Well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first?" But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
The Word of God tells us many times in one form or another, fear not. Many people are very fearful about some of the many perils and dangerous happenings that are going on in the world. Psalm 91 verses 1 and 2 tell us, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in Him I will trust." I'm Joseph Parker, and we here at the American Family Association would like to remind you, fear not, put your trust in the Lord. We'd like to both encourage and challenge you to aggressively put your faith to work. And one way to do that is to pray Psalm 91 daily for yourself and your family, and keep your trust in Him. If you'd like to get a copy of the Psalm 91 prayer for yourself, email us here at psalm91@afa.net. Again, that's psalm91@afa.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you today. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. By the way, our 2026 caregiver calendars are now available. I don't do a fundraiser at Standing with Hope. We don't do that. We don't have rubber chicken dinners, golf tournaments, all that kind of stuff. I don't even have a really good capital campaign. I'm the worst fundraiser out there. I tell that to our board. But every year I do the caregiver calendar. And it started with me taking pictures of where we live in Montana. And Gracie couldn't always get out to those places. And so I would take pictures, and they just made beautiful things around the house with them and so forth. And then I turned them into a calendar for each month. And I put a quote on it of things from my books or things I've said on this program to build up family caregivers, to point us higher, to lift us higher. And people seem to like it. So we've turned this into a thing here. And it's a way to help raise money for Standing with Hope. Gracie and I just give these calendars away to you as a thank you for supporting Standing with Hope. And you can go out at standingwithhope.com/giving and see how to do that. We have a Tumblr that we've made called, it says Healthy Caregivers Make Better Caregivers. That's out there. We have I'll do a signed book, all those kinds of things. Anything that Gracie and I can do to help raise money for this nonprofit ministry that is for the wounded and those who care for them. StandingWithHope.com/giving if you want to be a part of that, if you found this program to be meaningful to you. Well, let's go to the caregiver keyboard, which, by the way, I can't give away the caregiver keyboard. I have to use it for work. But let's talk about Advent. It's the season of Advent right now. You know what Advent is? It's the season of the church where there's about 4 weeks before Christmas where we're looking forward to the birth of Christ, the incarnation, but we're also in that time recognizing the yearning we have for His second coming. This started in the 4th or 5th century or so that they were using the churches in Spain and Gaul and other places were fasting and preparing their hearts for this season of Christmas and Epiphany. And these hymns that reflect this longing, knowing that He has already come, but He will also come again. And that's what sustains us as caregivers. I believe that knowing that He has come and that we look forward to when He returns, knowing that this will all be made right. I don't know how He does that, but He promised He would. And Charles Wesley, who we owe an enormous debt to, the church does, for his hymn writing, wrote a tremendous lyric for this. He also wrote another lyric that was set to the same tune. The tune is Heiferdahl, which was written by a young 19-year-old guy, just a kid who wrote this great enduring tune. But this is Come Thou Long Expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from our fears and sins, release us. Let us find our rest in thee. Israel's strength and consolation. Now, you know where that came from? That's what Simeon said in the temple when they brought Jesus to the temple to be circumcised, to be presented there. And Simeon had been told he wasn't going to die until he was able to see the promised Savior. And he called Israel's consolation. And it was a real touching moment there in Luke. And Charles Wesley was seeing just tremendous poverty and suffering and everything around him in Victorian England. And he actually was pre-Victorian England. Sorry about that. It was 1744. And he was seeing all this. And he went back and he looked in the scriptures and he found in Haggai, where we don't spend a lot of time in Haggai, do we? But he found it in Haggai 2:6, where the desire of all nations will be coming. That's what kind of clicked for Charles Wesley. He wrote this magnificent hymn, and it's like this. Come, thou long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from our fears and sins, release us. Let us find our rest in thee. What a hymn for caregivers. What a hymn. And then you go to this where Simeon, at that moment, Israel's strength and consolation, hope of all the earth thou art, dear desire of every nation, joy of every longing heart. And I like to put in a lot of different chords in it, and then again, for you church pianists, just do a walk down. Born thy people to deliver, born a child and yet a king, born to reign in us forever. Now thy gracious kingdom bring, by sufficient merit, raise us to thy glorious throne. And as you can tell, I put in some non-sanctioned chords, and that's sometimes people say, well, it's hard to sing parts with that. Well, maybe it is, but it sounds good, these chords, and I'll tell you what they are. When you go, by thine own eternal spirit, and I just do a walk down. You just, that's an A in the bass, A flat in the bass, G. And then it sounds real dissonant, but when you land on that major seven, oh, it feels so good. Da, 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 da. So listen to it in context. So, da, 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 da. Could also change it up a little bit here. Born to earth to taste our sadness, he whose glories knew no end. Go to a minor four. By his life he brings us gladness, our Redeemer, Shepherd, Friend, leaving rich
riches without number, born within a cattle stall. This the everlasting wonder, Christ was born, the Lord of all. Born thy people to deliver, pleased with us in flesh to dwell. Jesus, our Emmanuel, now thy gracious kingdom bring. By thine own eternal Spirit, rule in all our hearts alone. By thine all-sufficient merit, raise us to thy glorious throne.
It's a really fun hymn to play. I love to play that hymn. You can do so much with it. And like you saw, I modulated, and then I took in took some liberties with the chords. I love that, though, with the by thine own. That's a flat 9 chord. But look what happens when you land on that A minor 7. And then you do a walk up to the minor 6 chord. It's just a marvelous, marvelous hymn, and I love playing it. And it's a hymn that just I think wraps all around us as caregivers. Come to earth to taste our sadness. Do you realize what we just sang there? Well, I sang it, and I sang it poorly, but I hope you sing it with me. Come to earth to taste our sadness. People often ask, well, how can you believe in a God who allows so much suffering? Because our God came into our suffering. Charles Wesley just captured it in one line, come to earth to taste our sadness. He didn't have to do this. People say, why does God allow bad things? Well, why does he allow mercy? Why did he humble himself? He didn't have to. He whose glories knew no end, by his life he brings us gladness, our Redeemer, Shepherd, Friend. Leaving riches without number, born within a cattle stall. This is the everlasting wonder. Christ was born, the Lord of all. What a lyric. What a lyric. Would you go, if you don't have a hymnal, I would recommend you getting one, okay? We have lots of them scattered around here. Gracie stole one of them from a Baptist church a long time ago when she was a little girl. We still have it there. Don't tell anybody. All right, y'all don't say nothing. No, she took it home to practice with when she was a kid and evidently never made it back. I mean, it's like a 50-something-year-old hymnal. But anyway, go get you a hymnal and keep it in the house and go through it, flip through it, and look through these things, okay? And we'll keep going through them together. I can't wait till next week. I got another special one for you, and I love doing this. Thank you for being a part of this program. Thank you for letting me spend an hour with you. I'll see you next week. This is Peter Rosenberger, HopeForTheCaregiver.com.